to Tuned To Yesterday, revisiting shows from radio's golden age. I'm your host, Mark Livonier. Mystery coming up in this hour. Later on, we hear Jimmy Stewart in suspense. Right now, it's the case of the six Napoleons on Sherlock Holmes. This NBC broadcast stars Sir John Gielgud and Sir Ralph Richardson from March 6th, 1955.
The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes, the original and immortal stories of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, dramatized anew with Sir Ralph Richardson as Dr. Watson and Sir John Gielgud in the role of Sherlock Holmes.
This is your armchair movie reviewer. I love the movies, but I'm a pretty enthusiastic playgoer, too. And high up on my list of all-time favorites among Broadway musicals is the famous Kismet. So when I heard that a movie version was being produced, I wondered if the special magic of Kismet's song, spectacle, and romance could be completely captured on film. Well, I've just been to a preview of MGM's Kismet in color and CinemaScope, and this is to report the magic is all there. Kismet is magnificent, rich, lively, full of melody and imagination. In fact, even more wonderful than I'd hoped. Howard Keel and Life, Dolores Gray and Vic Damone are the stars. They do full justice to the 12 beautiful songs. As you probably know, Kismet means fate. Well, from now on, Kismet also means great. I think you'll agree, Kismet is truly great entertainment.
And now, the adventures of Sherlock Holmes.
I think I remember the six Napoleons, mainly because it was such a triumph for my friend Sherlock Holmes. The one time when his old rival Lestrade of Scotland Yard unashamedly spoke his praise. It hadn't always been like that, of course. In the early days, Lestrade had more than once been inclined to jeer at my friend's original methods. But by the time of this particular adventure, he'd lost some of his old enmity. He'd taken to looking in the evening at Baker Street and talking about old times and generally keeping Holmes up to date in everything that was going on at police headquarters. But this particular evening, as Holmes improvised on his violin, Lestrade fell curiously silent and puffed thoughtfully at his cigar for a moment or two.
Well, Lestrade, anything remarkable on hand?
Oh, no. Nothing in particular, you know, Mr. Holmes.
Oh, just so. Then hadn't you better tell me all about it?
Well, I suppose there's no use denying it. Except that it's such a peculiar business, I'd hardly wanted to bother you with it, Mr. Holmes. In fact, it's really more in the doctor's line than ours, I suppose.
Oh, really? What, some illness of some kind?
Mental illness. Madness, at the very least. And a queer kind of madness at that.
Really?
Now, you wouldn't think there was anyone living in this day and age who must hate old Napoleon so much that he smashes to bits any image of him he can lay hands on.
A hatred of Napoleon? Well, that's a very curious obsession, sir.
Yes, hardly in my line by the sound of it. Watson, I defer to you.
Thank you.
Yes, but the only thing is, of course...
Well, what, Lestrade? You're still chewing, you know.
Well, this maniac fellow adds a bit of burglary, too, do you see?
Burglary,
so as he can get hold of these images he wants to smash.
Really? Do just pass the tobacco, would you, my dear fellow?
Yes, of course.
Thank you.
It must be Napoleon, I take it, Lestrade.
Well, it seems so, Doctor. First case came in 4 days ago. Shop of a man called Morse Hudson, who sells pictures and statuettes and such in the Kennington Road. The assistant was in the back shop, and he heard a sudden smash, and when he rushed through, somebody had thrown down a plaster bust of Napoleon and broken it to smithereens.
Oh, valuable?
No, worth a few shillings maybe, not much more.
Oh.
Anyway, the shop fellow ran out to the street, but there wasn't any trace of anybody by that time.
But something's happened since, obviously.
Yes, last night. There's a well-known doctor called Barnicott, who lives only about a couple of hundred yards from Miss Morse Hudson's shop.
Yes, yes, I've heard of him. One of the biggest practices south of the Thames, they say.
Yeah, he's a bit of a collector too, isn't he? Antiques and so forth.
Huh?
Same man, gentlemen. Well, he got hold of a couple of plaster casts of the famous head of Napoleon by some French sculptor or other called Devine. He put one of them in the hall of his private house, and the other in his surgery at Lower Brixton. And when he came down this morning, Doctor...
Huh?
House burgled. And yet there wasn't a thing taken but the bust from the hall.
Good gracious.
And believe it or not, it had been carried outside and smashed against the garden wall, same as the other one in the shop.
Ah, this is certainly very novel, Lestrade.
I thought it would please you, Mr. Holmes. And it isn't the end yet, either.
The other bust, in the surgery.
Exactly the same, Doctor. Smashed to smithereens in the place where it stood. Dr. Barnicot discovered it the minute he opened the door. And that's the whole story, Mr. Holmes, as far as it goes.
Oh, well, it's curious, certainly. Now, Watson, come, pray give us your diagnosis.
There are no limits, my dear Holmes, to the possibilities of monomania. A man who'd read deeply about Napoleon, for example, or a man who'd received some hereditary family injury through the Peninsular War, for instance. I mean, a man like that very well might conceive some kind of obsession.
Come, my dear Watson. Well, considering how many examples of Napoleon's busts there must be, no amount of monomania would explain why such a promiscuous iconoclast should chance to begin on three examples by the same sculptor. As I take it, Lestrade, these three are all copies of the same original and all bought at this man Hudson's shop.
Every one, Mr. Holmes. Identical.
Why, then, the fellow may have an obsession against the sculptor.
Possibly. Yet even if it is madness, there's still method in it. You see, he carefully takes the bust that was in the house outside to smash it, because a noise might have wakened the people upstairs. But in the other case, he smashes the bust in the surgery just where it stands.
Oh, really, Pooh-Pooh, that's too trifling, my dear
Holmes.
One
never knows, Watson. One can never be quite sure. Some of my most classic cases have had the least promising beginnings.
Yes, but you...
You'll remember how that dreadful business of the Abernethy family was first brought to my notice by the depth to which the parsley had sunk into the butter on a very hot day.
But, Mr. Holmes,
we can't...
Parsley strayed another cigar, my dear fellow, and ring for some whiskey and soda. I have a notion that we may hear more of our friend of the statue.
Next morning, as we finished breakfast, a telegram arrived from Lestrade himself. Come instantly, 131 Pitt Street, Kensington. With Holmes' usual energy, we did go. Instantly. There, we found the railings outside the house all lined by a curious crowd.
By George, Watson, it must be attempted murder at the very least. There's nothing else will hold the interest of the London messenger boy.
There's Lestrade waiting for us, Holmes. Good morning, Inspector.
Morning, gentlemen. Come in. Yes, Napoleon business again, Mr. Holmes.
Ah, I guessed as much. What is it this time, Lestrade?
Murder, sir.
Splendid. Do close the door, my dear Watson.
Yes.
This confounded crowd. This is Mr. Horace Harker, gentlemen, the owner of this house. Mr. Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson, Mr. Harker.
Good morning, sir.
How do you do?
Mr. Harker's a reporter for the Central Press Syndicate, Mr. Holmes.
I'd gathered so much already, Lestrade. Well, Mr. Harker, will you kindly tell us exactly what has happened?
Well, I'll do my best, sir. It all seems to center around a bust of Napoleon I bought for this very room about 4 months ago.
Where did you buy it, Mr. Harker?
What? Oh, Harding Brothers, you know, a few doors up from the High Street Station. I don't know what that's got to do with it. Anyway, most of my writing work's done at night, you know. Habit of mine. And I was sitting upstairs in my den about 3 o'clock this morning when I suddenly heard the most horrible yell from down here. Oh, the most dreadful sound, Mr. Holmes.
Plainly news on your own doorstep, Mr. Harker. As a reporter, I should have thought you would have welcomed such a diversion.
Oh, I couldn't. I was too unnerved, I don't mind telling you.
I see.
Anyway, I pulled myself together a bit and I got hold of a poker and came down. When I got in here, the window was open, sir. And the first thing I saw was that the Napoleon bust had gone from the mantelpiece.
Intriguing, most intriguing.
I'm sure my monomaniac theory is the only possible one, Holmes.
Yes, of course. And the murder, Mr. Harker?
Well, I rushed to the front door and threw it open and there, on the doorstep...
Well?
I nearly fell over. A dead man who was lying there.
Good gracious me.
Yes, he had a great gash in his throat and the whole place was swimming in blood.
But who was this murdered man? You've made inquiries, Lestrade.
Of course. There's nothing to show who he was. We've got the body in the mortuary. You can see it if you want.
What does he look like?
Tall, thin, sunburnt, poorly dressed. Artisan of some kind, I'd say. Obviously a foreigner. There wasn't any name on his clothing and there was nothing in his pockets except an apple and some string and a shilling map of London and a man's photograph. Here it is, Mr. Holmes.
Plainly not a picture of the fellow himself, judging by your description. What do you make of this, Watson?
Well, let's see. Well, somewhat simian in type, eh?
Yes.
Thick eyebrows, you see, Holmes? Very peculiar projection on the lower part of the face. Altogether, I should say, Southern European, I'd guess.
Admirable, Watson. And the bustless trade. What happened to Mr. Harker's bust of Napoleon?
We had news of it 5 minutes before you came. Smashed to smithereens in the front garden of an empty house in Camden Hill Road.
Uh-huh.
I'm going round to see it now. Want to come?
Well, of course, of course. We leave you in peace now, Mr. Harker. I'm sure you must be impatient to write up your own story for one of your newspapers.
Oh, it's too late now, I'm afraid. First editions are probably out with it already.
Oh, that's too bad.
Just my luck. Oh, but perhaps a cup of tea. I've been too confused to write a thing so far.
Well, at any rate, you must try. And you can quote me if you like. Say that I believe my friend Watson's theory is almost certainly the right one.
Ah, my dear Holmes, you really think...
Yes, he is convinced that the crime was the work of a dangerous homicidal lunatic with Napoleonic delusions.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Holmes. Yes, I could certainly use that.
You really do believe it, Holmes.
Why not, Watson? Why not? It'll serve for the moment and for the press. Come, Lestrade, let us view the remains.
Ah, yes, the body, Mr. Holmes.
No, the bust. I propose to indulge in a little jigsaw work. You see, if all the fragments fit together to make the head complete again...
What then, Holmes?
Well, I may be able to... you and I will have some interesting work to do, Watson. Good morning, Mr. Harker.
Come, gentlemen.
With some little trouble, Holmes succeeded in reconstructing the whole bust from the splinters scattered over the garden of that empty house. Why he did this, I didn't know. Lestrade and I obediently, but mystified, fetched and carried at his direction. Holmes' face was enigmatic as he and I next drove to the premises of Morse Hudson, the supplier of the first three busts that had been broken. From him, we learnt the name of the original manufacturers of the articles, Messrs. Gelder and Company of Stepney. In a side street, we found the statuette factory, and we learnt from the proprietor...
Oh, but there are thousands, Mr. Holmes. We took thousands of casts of the Divine Napoleon.
I've no doubt it's a noble work, but this batch of six, noted down in these books of yours which I have before me... You see the entries, Watson, all dated about a year ago.
Yes, and marked in two consignments. Yes, one set of three to Morse Hudson.
And the other three to Harding Brothers of Kensington. Ah, who does the casting work on these statuettes of yours, Mr. Gelder?
Usually Italians, Mr. Holmes. We find they work well.
Ah, and you recognize this particular Italian, this obvious Italian? Watson, pray show him the photograph that Lestrade gave us.
Yes. Here it is.
Ah, the rascal.
Beppo, indeed. Well, what was his other name?
I never knew it, even though he used to work here. Oh, he was a madman, sir. I never knew a man with such a temper. He knifed another Italian in the street one day, and then he came running into the works with the police on his heels, and they arrested him in this very workroom.
Well, and what sentence did he get?
The man he attacked lived in, so he got off with a year.
Uh-huh.
I must be out by now, of course. If you wanted to know where he is, we have a cousin of his here who could tell you.
No, not a word to the cousin, I beg of you.
No?
The matter's most important, Mr. Gelder. Indeed, the further I go with it, the more important it seems to grow. I don't think we need intrude upon you then anymore, Mr. Gelder. I'm much obliged to you.
Oh, not at all, only too glad to help you.
We have one more visit to make, Watson. To Harding Brothers back in Kensington. Then luncheon, I suggest, and a telegram to Lestrade to come to Baker Street this evening. And then, Watson...
And then, Holmes?
Yeah, well, that invaluable army revolver of yours may once more be pressed into service, old friend.
Indeed?
We have some dangerous work ahead of us, if I'm not mistaken. There are two of them still at large.
Two criminals, Holmes?
No, only one criminal. But two busts of Napoleon, my dear Watson. Come along! Lestrade, my dear Lestrade. You weren't busy, I hope.
Busy, Mr. Holmes? I'm always busy. It's our motto at the Yard.
Of course.
You'll be happy to hear, by the way, that I've solved our mystery.
What? You have?
Of course, sir. We have our methods, too, you know. I've identified the dead man.
My dear Lestrade.
Oh, yes, Doctor. We've an inspector who makes a speciality of Saffron Hill in the Italian Quarter. He knew our corpse the minute he set eyes on him. His name was Pietro Venucci, from Naples he was, and he was one of the most notorious cutthroats in London.
Benucci, the last link.
He was connected with the old secret society of the Mafia, you see, and it's perfectly clear that he must have broken the rules in some way, so this fellow of the photograph is sent to kill him, or even perhaps the other way around. You know how fiendish they are in these vendetta things. At any rate, one is shadowing the other. There's a scuffle outside Harker's house, and in the struggle, Vannucci gets his death wound. How's that, Mr. Holmes?
Perfect, perfect.
I confess it seems to hang together admirably.
Yeah, except, of course, for Napoleon.
Ah, the busts are only a coincidence. We're on the murderer's trail, of course, as I expect you are, too, from your wire. So all we need to do is to make our way to the Italian quarter, where I've no doubt we'll be able to find him.
No, my dear fellow, Chiswick.
Chiswick's a highly respectable residential district.
Ah, and therefore the most likely neighborhood for spectacular happenings. If you've ever trusted me before, my dear Lestrade, trust me now. I'll promise to go with you tomorrow to the Italian quarter if I fail you. Now, for your part, come with Watson and me tonight to Chiswick. Is that a bargain?
Well, I take you on trust, Mr. Holmes.
You do very wisely. You'll have dinner with us first, Lestrade.
Well, now that's very nice.
Have you ordered the four-wheeler, Watson?
For 11, to take us over to be on the other side of Hammersmith Bridge.
Good, good. And you have the address, of course, the one we got from the fellow at Harding Brothers.
Yes, yes. Laburnum Lodge, Laburnum Vale, Chiswick.
Admirable. You never fail me, Watson. Oh, would you pass me my hunting crop there, Lestrade?
Lizzie?
Yeah, thank you. The handle is weighted with lead, a most useful weapon, as I've proved before. Now, let us address ourselves to the important process of nutrition. It may be a long time before we eat again.
Morepeau, the Helms, the Neves. Ah, Laburnum Lodge. Well, Holmes, here we are.
Excellent. And with this particularly tall fence for our concealment.
They've gone to bed, it seems. Whole place is in darkness.
I sent Mr. Brown a personal message asking him to cooperate.
Mr. Brown?
Mr. Josiah Brown, Lestrade, whose name we obtained as the purchaser of the fifth Napoleon.
You and your Napoleons, Mr. Holmes. I've told you that all that part of it's only coincidence. It's this Mafia business that's the real crux.
Well, if you say so, Lestrade. Now then, Watson, do you crouch down here, close to the hedge? You better lie down in the long grass, Watson. Here. Here. And, Lestrade, you stay here beside me.
Yeah.
Good, good.
Look there, Mr. Holmes. The open window.
What? Not so long after all, then.
Yes, that's him. He must have been inside when we arrived. Our luck's in.
There's a light there, flickering. Do you see?
Yes, we've got him. And in respectable Chiswick, too, Lestrade.
He's climbing out. Oh, thank heaven for the moonlight.
Look, he's carrying something white under his arm.
Ah, the fifth Napoleon. No, wait, Lestrade. Wait, man. Let's see what he does. He's coming closer, do you see?
He stopped there, by the street lamp. Holmes, I do believe he's going to...
Exactly. Smashed to smithereens like all the others. And while he's busy examining it, Lestrade... On him! Watson! After me!
He's safe enough now, I reckon. What's your name, my man? Won't speak, eh?
His name's Beppo Lestrade. At least if I follow Holmes aright. Holmes, didn't you say that? Oh, good heavens, where is he? Holmes!
All right, Watson, I'm over here with the bust. Ah, well, Lestrade, you've got him then. For my own part, I've been attending to our friend the good Napoleon. But with no good results so far, I fear... It seems the final secret still eludes us.
Upon my soul, Mr. Holmes, you beat me. You do, really. Still harping on about these statues.
Yes, I'm almost one of Watson's monomaniacs on the subject, Lestrade.
Shove a cinnamony libri.
Oh, will you please take the prisoner to Bow Street now, Lestrade? Sure. And if you'll kindly come round to Baker Street at about 6 o'clock tomorrow evening, I think I shall then be able to show you that even now you've not grasped the entire meaning of this affair. Come, Watson, come back to Baker Street in our four-wheeler. What time is it, Watson?
6 o'clock, Holmes. And here comes our man, dead on time.
Ah, Lestrade, good evening to you.
Good evening.
Well, Mr. Holmes, you were right, of course.
Of course.
I mean about the fellow Beppo. I've been able to check everything. Other name unknown. Pretty celebrated as a ne'er-do-well in the Italian colony. Temper of the Fiend. Used to be a successful sculptor, but fell in evil ways.
Watson, that's the street bell, I believe. Ah, yes, and I hear footsteps on the staircase. Would you prepare to receive our visitor?
Certainly, Holmes, certainly.
Ah, good evening, sir. Mr. Sandiford of Reading, I suppose.
Yes, sir. Mr. Sherlock Holmes is expecting me. I had a letter from him by special messenger.
Yes, yes, come in, Mr. Sandiford. This is Mr. Holmes here.
Good evening, sir.
Let me take your bag.
Carefully, carefully, I beg you, my dear Watson. That bag contains the whole object of our search. That's right, isn't it, Mr. Sandiford?
Well, if you mean the Napoleon bust, yes, it does, sir. It beats me how you knew I had one.
Well, we had your name from Mr. Harding of Harding Brothers, Mr. Sandiford. He told us that they'd sold you their last copy, and they gave us your address.
Yes, quite so. Now then, sir, do you agree to my terms as I set them out in my letter?
Well, you said you'd be prepared to pay me £10 for it.
£10 it is, Mr. Sandiford.
Oh, I'm an honest man, Mr. Holmes. Of course, the money attracts me, but I think you ought to know I only paid 15 shillings for it.
I've named my price, Mr. Sandiford, and I intend to stick to it. There you are, sir. £10. Yes, and in return, I shall only ask you to sign this paper in the presence of these witnesses. It's simply to say that you transfer all possible rights you ever had in the purchase to me. Thank you so much. Good evening, Mr. Sandiford. The landlady downstairs will show you out.
Oh, I'm much obliged to you, I'm sure, Mr. Holmes. Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening. Good evening.
Now, Watson, now, Lestrade, the bust on the table there, and my celebrated loaded hunting crop in my hand, and so!
Holmes!
Great heavens, sir!
Holmes, what are you doing?
You see? There, the perfect hiding place. That's what I was looking for when I fitted the other bust together in the garden. See, that fragment that was the Emperor's ear, embedded like a plum in a pudding? Let me introduce you, gentlemen, to the famous Black Pearl of the Borgias. Nothing less.
What? Well, bravo, Holmes. Bravo, sir.
Bless my soul. Bravo, bravo indeed.
Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you.
But what made you link it all together, Holmes?
Elementary, my dear Watson. You'll remember, Lestrade, that at the time when the pearl disappeared, some suspicion fell on the princess's maid, who was an Italian girl named...
Vannucci, of course.
Lucrezia Vannucci. It was believed that she had a brother in London who worked with her as a jewel thief.
The fellow who was murdered 2 nights ago.
As you say, Watson. I then recollected that the pearl had disappeared just 2 days before the arrest of the man Beppo for some crime of violence.
Huh.
The police were after him. He had the pearl in his possession. He may have stolen it from Vannucci, or he may even have been Vannucci's confederate. At any event, before the police arrived, he hid it in the only place he could think of in the moment. One of the wet plaster casts of the Napoleon head, which were at that moment being molded in the factory.
And he's been in prison for a year.
Just so. And when he came out, he found from his cousin in the factory where that consignment of that day's Napoleons had gone. And somehow or other traced the address of each purchaser.
But how did he run across Vannucci again?
Ah, we'll never know that, Lestrade, unless he decides to talk. I take it that they may have quarreled if they were confederates, or that Vannucci was out for revenge if Beppo had stolen the gem from him. At any rate, he also got on the trail. They met outside Harker's house. There was a scuffle, and behold your murder, Lestrade.
And you knew the pearl must be in the Sandiford bust, Holmes.
Well, naturally, when I saw last night that it wasn't in the fifth one at Liburnum Lodge.
Huh?
I wrote to Mr. Sandiford, as you know, bought the pearl in your presence from the owner for £10, and there it lies in all its glory.
Well, I've seen you handle a good many cases, Mr. Holmes, but I don't know that I ever knew a more workmanlike one than that. We're not jealous of you at the Scotland Yard. Oh, no, sir. We're very proud of you. And if you come down tomorrow, there's not a man, from the oldest inspector to the youngest constable, who wouldn't be glad to shake you by the hand.
Thank you, Lestrade. Thank you.
The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes, based on the original stories of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, have been dramatized anew with original music composed by Sidney Torch. Sir Ralph Richardson played the part of Dr. Watson, and Sir John Gielgud, that of Sherlock Holmes.
Sherlock Holmes on Tuned to Yesterday from March 6, 1955 on NBC. The story first appeared in print in 1903 as a collection called The Return of Sherlock Holmes by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. It's an hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now, from the same year, Jimmy Stewart was starring in The Stratton Story alongside June Allison, comedian Frank Morgan, and radio actress Agnes Moorehead. He now stars in the tale Mission Completed on Suspense. Certainly one of the more memorable Stewart performances on air from CBS, heard on December 1st, 1949.
Dealers present Mr. James Stewart in Mission Completed, a suspense play produced and edited by William Spear.
Are you all right for the night, Tom?
How do you know when he's all right?
Tom and I have a secret code, don't we, Tom? He blinks once for yes and twice for no. Are you okay, Tom? Night.
Okay. Sure, I'm okay. I've been okay ever since I got liberated from Sagamo Prison in Tokyo in 1945. Yeah, ever since I woke up in this veterans' hospital 4 years ago, I've been okay. I got nothing to do but lie flat on my back and let my eyes wander over the ceiling and look at Suki smiling down at me. Suki seems to smile down at me from the little plaster square of ceiling that reminds me of the prison yard in Sagamo. He can't help smiling and laughing because he knows I can't get at him. Suki knows I'm paralyzed. He knows I can only blink my eyes once for yes and twice for no. You see, Suki was in charge of the camp at Sagamo. And he helped slaughter guys like Campbell and Jones, Mayberry, Evans, too many more to count. First he starved them until they couldn't crawl, and then he... Well, anyway, just before we got liberated, I fuzzed up in my mind. I couldn't remember anything. Sometime later, I woke up in a vet's hospital, California, USA. And I've been on my back for 4 years staring at that little square. Well, once in a while, they dump me in a wheelchair and push me out into the sunshine and wheel me up and down the walk like I was a baby. Only babies can cry.
Which road today, Tom? Do we go down the walk through the grounds or the sidewalk down by the florist shop? Just open your eyes wide if it's a sidewalk. Well, good. You'll see all the flowers. Well, here comes Janet, Willie Murdoch. Remember him?
Hello, Tom. Hello, Tom.
Hi, Janet. How are you doing?
Getting in case for the dance tonight. Am I really?
Hiya, Tom.
I'll see you there. Hi. Isn't Janet a pretty girl? I'll bet you have a nice girl someplace. Come on now, haven't you? We're almost at the flower shop, Tom. Oh, see that man in the window? Isn't that a pretty bouquet he's getting together? Well, look how tan he is. Oh, I guess he's a jet.
I'm sitting in a wheelchair, paralyzed, looking at a man on a flower shop window, and the man I'm looking at is Suki. And while I'm looking at him, something's happening to me. My fingers that I haven't worked for 4 years are grabbing the arms of the wheelchair, and my legs are straining and pushing against the floor. The same legs I haven't used for 48 months. And I want to cry out, and I feel my tongue getting ready to...
Tom! Tom, what's the matter with you? Come on, Tom, now, relax. Maybe you don't like flowers. Ha-ha. That's just like a man. Doesn't like flowers. You want to go home now, Tom?
It's Suki. A man on the flower shop window, and it's Suki. I know it is. If we can get closer, all I have to do is look at that scar down the side of his face. I gave him that scar in Sagamo.
Do you want to go home, Tom? Now, don't frown like that. Tom, what's the matter? Do you want to go closer? Okay, if you want to go closer to the flower shop.
It was Suki, all right. Yeah, it was Suki. We got real close to the shop and I got a good look. The scar on his face stood out like a half moon. He was busy with flowers. Flowers? I couldn't imagine him working with flowers, but it was Suki. And this time I didn't clench my fingers or strain my legs. I just lay back in the chair and relaxed. And I began to plan. I began a plan that I'd started the day I looked around and I found myself in a Jap prison camp. A plan that almost worked the day Suki got that scar. It didn't work that day. It's gonna work now.
I'll leave you here by the door a minute, Tom. Then we'll put you to bed. All right, Tom. Tom, how did you get moved over there? Didn't I leave you right here by the door? Tom, did you wheel yourself over there? Oh, so that's it. Somebody came in here and gave you a push. One day you'll be pushing that chair around like mad, Tom. Just you wait. All right, now, we'll get ready for bed.
You ready for me?
Just about. Would you bring Dr. Benson here?
Okay.
Can't imagine who just walked in here and gave you a shove. Wouldn't it be funny if you did it yourself? Didn't know it.
You sent for me, Miss Rhodes.
He must have used his hands. He wheeled himself across the room.
Mm-hmm. How are you tonight, Tom? And I think that sunshine is doing you some good. Tom, did you move yourself across the room? And if you did, blink your eyes once. And if you didn't, blink them twice. No, you didn't do it, huh? That's all. Thank you, Tom.
I got myself in a jam already. It's funny how I grabbed those wheels instinctively. I guess I gave myself a shove. And now I'm in bed, and I'm looking up at that little square. The hospital's quiet, except for Murdoch, who you can always hear mumbling someplace far off. So then I'm turning over in my face in bed, moving muscles I haven't moved for 4 long years. And in a moment, I was sitting up. I was trying to light my own cigarette. But then I got so exhausted, I decided to wait till the next night. And it was the same thing over again. Night after night, I practiced at being alive. 10 days later, I got out of bed and I stood up. And 2 weeks later, I was so strong that I walked around the room 10 times. I never felt better in my life. And that night, I nearly got caught. I was sitting in my chair, smoking a cigarette. I scrambled into bed.
Sleep, Tom? You've been having visitors, Tom. The air's full of smoke. Tom, are you asleep?
Oh, yeah, that's a close one. Well, nothing ever came of it, though, but I was more careful after that. A week went by. Every day brought me closer and closer to Suki. And Suki closer and closer to some of his own medicine right back in his face. And then something happened that spoiled everything.
Tom, we've got good news for you this morning.
Look how wide his eyes are. You better not keep him waiting.
Tom, you're getting out of here. We're moving you to within 20 miles of your old hometown. You're going to Colville Hospital.
Better tell him when.
Yes. Tomorrow morning.
He doesn't seem to like it. Tom, what's the matter?
Suki was laughing now. He stood on that little square in the ceiling. He laughed down at me because he knew I was going away and I'd never get him. So they were shipping me out on Sunday. Yeah, tomorrow was Sunday. And then I had a plan. I had a desperate plan. It might work and it might not. But if it did, it would bring Suki right into my room. You see, the plan wouldn't work except today was Saturday. And Right the day before they were shipping me to Colville, 3,000 miles away. Today, yeah, today was Saturday, and on Saturday...
This is your last spin around the grounds, Tom. And here comes Jackie. I'll bet you forgot this was Saturday, and Jackie's out of school. And he's going to play Mr. Wheelchair Conductor. Hello, Jackie. You ready to take over?
Sure thing, Miss Rose.
I get him lots of sun and keep him out full time. Then when you're through, you can help Janet with Murdoch.
Yes, Miss Rhodes.
I'll see you later. You be careful.
You bet.
All right, kid, you can stop.
What? Did you say something?
I said stop right here.
Gosh, I didn't know you could talk, mister. Well, sure, I'll stop right here, but well, maybe I'd better get an order.
Stay right here and shut up. You listen to me. You and I are going to have a little secret. Are you with me?
What kind of a secret?
You just don't say anything about what you see or hear until tomorrow. Now, what are you going to do? Are you going to help a soldier or are you going to spill everything?
What? Why? Well, I'll help, of course.
All right, now. Now, keep pushing me until we get down to that tavern, then push me in that little alcove there. Come on, come on, come on. What are we waiting for? Hurry up.
Yeah, mister. Yeah, but I shouldn't be doing this, should I?
That's the best thing you ever did. Now, go into that tavern and get me $3 worth of quarters. Here's $3. I'm going to use this phone. And don't get any funny ideas about calling the hospital. You're working with me, aren't you, kid?
Well, I guess so.
All right, now. I'm going to watch you through the glass of this phone booth. Stay right out there where I can see you. Get me?
Yes, sir.
All right, here goes.
You shouldn't get up. Hey, don't try to get off of your wheelchair.
I'm already out. All right, now stand right there. Stand where I can see you. Long distance, one.
Long distance.
I want to talk to Bill Mason at Mason's Real Estate Office in San Bernardino.
What is your name, please?
My name's Tom Warner.
That'll be $1.25 for 3 minutes.
$1?
Please deposit $1.25 for 3 minutes.
$1.25.
Here is your party.
Hello, Bill.
Hello, who's this?
Tom. Tom Warner.
Who is this?
It's Tom. It's Tom, you dope. What's the matter?
Just can't get it through my thick head, that's all. Last time I heard about you...
I know, but it's all over now. I'm alive. Now, Bill, listen to me. Now, listen close. Listen awful close, Bill. Bill, Suki's alive.
Suki?
Yeah, Suki. He's working in a flower shop in the hospital here.
Are you crazy?
No, I've seen him. I've watched him. I've noticed all his gestures. Yeah, he's got that scar I gave him right on the side of his face. Hey, are you listening?
Yeah, go on.
Now, I want you to get a hold of Curly. And tonight, the three of us will blast him right out of the face of the earth.
Tom, are you okay?
What's the matter with you? I found Suki. He's here right in the United States where we can get at him.
Well, if you're sure it's Suki, why don't you call the cops or the FBI?
Because I know what'll happen to him then. He'll end up in American jail and he'll have a nice soft bed to sleep in. He'll get three good hot meals a day. And he'll get all the comforts of home. Look what he gave to us, son, in your life, Bill. Now look, if you start driving right now, you can be here by 9:00.
Tom, the war's over. I forgot all that stuff a long time ago. I want you to forget it, too.
Sure, and you can forget it all if you want to. I know why you're forgetting it. It's because you're a chicken, that's why. You haven't got the guts to face him, and your lousy yellow and your backbone has turned to a sponge. I only wish Mayberry and Evans were all here to listen to the lousy rot that was dripping out of you.
Tom, what's the matter?
I'm blacking out.
Oh, hang on, Tom, hang on. What place are you calling from, Tom? Tom?
I'm going flat on my face.
Where are you, Tom?
Wouldn't you like to know?
Tom, can you hear me?
Help me, kid.
Gee, you shouldn't have got up, mister.
There, why, brace the chair. Just lie back.
Yeah, I'll be all right. Maybe I need a little air.
Gee, you look as wet as a sheet.
I don't say anything about this, kid. Just keep your mouth shut until tomorrow, will you? Tomorrow morning, I'll be going away. You promise me that?
Well, okay.
Okay, now, take me home, huh?
Yes, sir.
I was back in my room, flattened out like a pancake. And the bed in the room kept spinning around, wouldn't stay still. Pretty soon I got a sort of a second wind. I decided to try to get up out of bed. I found I could get up okay. I was awful weak. I'd just about given up my plan when I happened to look out the window. The day watchman was changing places with the night patrolman, and the item that caught my eye was a big, fat revolver bulging at the man's side. Maybe my plan would work after all. I didn't need Bill Mason and Curly and anybody else. All I needed was my two hands, a little luck. See, I'd have to make another phone call. Well, there's a phone on this floor right in front of Murdoch's door. This is Dr. Benson.
Oh, yes, doctor.
Would you send a bouquet of flowers, roses. A lot of big roses, up to 411. One of the patients is leaving, and we'd like to make him feel good. It's kind of a surprise just before he goes to sleep and the ward's quiet. You see, about 9 o'clock this evening.
Okey-dokey. You want some fern to go with it?
Yeah, I think that'd be nice. Just a minute. Who delivers at that hour? Have you got someone?
Oh, I deliver myself, just before I close up. Okie dokie.
Fine, thank you. I just got the phone back on the hook when Dr. Benson and two nurses came walking along. Like a shot, I dropped to the floor of the phone booth, and I tried to double up like an accordion. My heart beat so loudly, I was afraid they'd hear it. But drowning out my heart was Murdoch saying something.
Hey, Tom's on the phone.
Don't be silly, Sam.
Yeah?
I held my breath. But they kept on walking down the hall. And they turned into the solarium. I got up. I got the door open. I almost fell across the hall into my room. I lay back in the bed, gasping and waiting for my pulse to get back to normal. And it was 8 o'clock. Getting dark outside. The only sound was the clock ticking in the hall. I was getting all the breaks. A summer shower had just come up, and light wind blowing. I got down the hall all right and through the solarium to the fire escape. It was easy going down, hugging the shadows. Pretty soon I was at the bottom. I spotted the patrolman sitting under the little eaves at the tool shed. He's trying to keep out of the rain. My hand closed around a broken brick that had fallen off the building. I crept up in back of him. I got the brick ready to smash him on the head when I suddenly realized he was asleep. I took a step real close. And then I had his revolver, and I was pointing it right into his eyes, which were still blinking off some sleep, and he muttered, and then he started to yell. One little whisper, and this goes off right in your face. Now get up and get into that tool shed.
Sure. Open the door and crawl in. Come on, quick.
All right, now take this adhesive tape. Tie your feet together. Come on, hurry up. Tight, hurry.
What are you trying to do, fella?
Shut up. Do as I say. I made him tie his feet together with an adhesive tape and lie flat in his face. And while I wound long strips of tape around his wrist,
take it in.
I tied his wrist together and then I hog-tied his wrist and his feet and pulled them up tight behind him.
Then I turned him over in his side and I crammed two handkerchiefs into his mouth. Put long strips of tape around those. And the rain was coming down in buckets as it made my way back to the fire escape. I made the first two flights. And then three. And finally hit four. And I slid on my face out cold. I don't know how long I lay there on those iron bars of the fire escape. It was too long for my plans. Well, there was nobody in the hall, so I ran for it. Still nobody in the hall. Still nobody. Nobody in my room. I slid open the door and I started for bed. The bed met me halfway and I lay there soaking wet with a gun sticking out of my pocket. I spun the cylinder. I saw 6.45 caliber bullets. 15 minutes went by. Then it was 9 o'clock. The ward was very quiet. You could have heard a pin drop. Nothing sounded until I heard the sound of the elevator. And it's stopping on four. Someone had got out of the elevator and was padding down the hall. And it was the same little shuffle I'd heard every day for 3 years in a bug-infested hellhole called the prison camp. Yeah, the same footsteps, the footsteps I used to turn my brain to water and send my heart right down to my shoes. The footsteps that meant someone was going to get it. And I wanted to yell and scream, "Come on, Suki, it's different now. Come on, Suki, I'm waiting for you." But I couldn't breathe very good. Every breath, I took ground on Suki's feet. So I just took a little short breath, and I waited. And I had to grab the revolver with both hands to keep it steady. And Suki was getting closer. And so I released the safety catch, and I tried to keep my wobbly hand steady. He was almost here now. The knob was turning in the door.
Suki, Tom. He's dead. And he'll never bother you again. You killed him.
Yes, I did. I killed Suki.
Now give me the gun, Tom. Yeah, that's it. Yes, you killed Suki in your mind. He's dead in your mind. You can forget him now, Tom.
Yeah, I think I better sit down.
Miss Rhodes, shove that wheelchair out of the room. You can sit in a chair, Tom, but not in a wheelchair. You're through with that for good.
What?
Now, Jimmy.
What's that?
Are you all right?
Yes, Doctor.
No powder burns?
No, I'm fine, Doctor.
Good, good. Now, Tom. Tom, I want you to meet Jimmy Cato, who works in our flower shop here, and who was Lieutenant Cato of the armed forces in Italy not so long ago.
Yeah, I killed Suki. I killed
Suki. Yes, yes. In your mind, you killed Suki, Tom, and you're okay now. The man you thought was Suki was Jimmy Cato. He was born and raised here in this community, and he has almost as many medals as you have. Now, I want you to shake hands with him.
I'm paralyzed. All I can do is blink my eyes.
No, you are not, Tom. You are going to shake hands with Jimmy and thank him.
Hello, Cato. I'm sorry.
Oh, nothing to be sorry about. When Dr. Benson told me about your reaction the day you saw me, I was glad to help out.
You see, Tom, we're pretty thorough here. When you thought you saw Suki, Miss Rhodes made a notation that you flexed muscles you hadn't commanded for nearly 4 years. And so we went from there.
Well, you must have thick skin, Cato. I'm pretty good shot.
No. The patrolmen on the grounds here, Tom, always carried blanks, no bullets. You're going home tomorrow, Tom. Well on the way to complete recovery. And in your mind, there's a big X mark, canceling out a nightmare of 4 years' duration. And written in huge letters is a beautiful sign, Tom. And it says to you, once and for all, Mission completed.
Suspense, presented by Autolite. Tonight's star, James Stewart.
Oh, Mr. Wilcox, Mr. Wilcox.
Well, Gracie Allen, what are you doing here?
Well, I came to ask you and Jimmy Stewart if you can fix it with Autolite for my husband, Sugar Throat Burns, to sing on Suspense. Our sponsor will hear it and realize how great George is, and then he'll let him sing on our show Wednesday night.
Well, look, Gracie, Suspense is all booked up for next week. Mickey Rooney will be on.
Well, how about the week after that, Mr. Stewart?
No, they're booked up for that week, too. Lana Turner will be here that week. As a matter of fact, they're booked up for the next 4,000 weeks.
Oh, 4,000 weeks would be about...
That's 80 years.
Oh, how about the week after that?
Well, I've got to leave, Gracie. Tell George that he has all my condolences.
Oh, really? I'm surprised they fit him. You know, you're so tall.
Suspense, on Tuned to Yesterday from December 1st, 1949 on CBS. Closing this hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levanier. It's been a pleasure.